Good morning. Today is Wednesday, April the 27th, 128th day of the new year. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Chairman of the Board, Mark Lovelace.
How are you?
I am here. How about you?
We are both here. That is all a right. statement of fact. That tells us absolutely nothing.
Let's see if I can find some kind of a quote here. This is a Turkish proverb. Fame is a calamity. Yeah. So how did you take the death of Prince last week?
You know, I was never a big Prince fan. I didn't dislike his music or whatever, but I just didn't know, for someone that churned out like 59 albums in his career.
Yeah, I know. I kind of felt stupid too.
I didn't know his music that well, but
Raspberry Beret.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1999, and that's
Kiss
about,
and Purple Rain. Yeah. And so many others. But I mentioned to someone that, you know, in his case, I don't think he's so much died as just, you know, he's just entered the next phase of his career. Yeah. I think he's so prolific that, you know, we're going to all continue to
discover and uncover.
Yeah. Yeah. He'll still have an impact, you know, long past his death.
Somebody had shared last week that he was proficient. I mean, proficient to the point of being at that level of wow, professional, proficient.
Yeah.
27 instruments.
Yeah.
There was some recording session. I guess some guys like in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm a Conan O'Brien. That's the night show that I'll watch. He basically kicked the guy out off the drums, sat down, knocked it out.
I heard, you know, there's a lot of anecdotes coming out about him, and I heard one that was when he got his was being offered his first contract for recording. He said, okay, but I've got to have complete creative control. And, you know, studios, especially back then, you know, no independence.
First,
was like, no.
First record?
No, you do not get creative control. And they met with him and they talked with him and they said, okay, we'll give you complete creative control. And it was unheard of. Yeah, you know, but they were that taken with his ability and his vision of what he was doing that they gave him that.
Well, I also like the fact he's a basketball fan.
Yeah.
And player in high school. He played, really? I guess there were a couple of kids from his high school that did really well.
Despite his height limitation?
Yeah,
so there's hope for someone like me, is what you're saying?
There was, back in high school. Yeah, it's intriguing for me. It's the reaction that people have and how many will associate or bond with a celebrity or perhaps with what the music represented in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's gone, or there's a recognition that that's in the rearview mirror, not in the windshield in front of you. Just interesting how people react.
Yeah, you know, looking at some, and certainly we've had so many, you know, deaths of so many, you know, phenomenal musicians in the last, just in the last 3 or 4 months now, that it's given us a lot of time to, a lot of opportunity to reflect upon that impact.
You know what that means? We're getting old.
Yeah, that's happening too.
Yeah, so. And the folks that we remember and like, they're getting old too.
Yeah. Well, you know, I wonder, and admittedly, I'm old. My idea of new music is still 30 years old, you know. But, I don't keep up with the stuff the kids are listening to these days, you know, and I get to actually say that kind of stuff because I'm that old. But I do wonder, you know, when you look at people like Prince and David Bowie and some of these phenomenal musicians, are there folks making music today that are going to have that kind of status? Yeah, that when they
we had that discussion in the office too.
Yeah, you know, we're going to feel like this tremendous loss of, you know, what they've contributed as an artist. I mean, there's, you know, certainly people with a lot of fame, but
it boils down to, where is Frank? KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
Never heard us before, because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us. Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Mark Lovelace. Mark, one of the things I think that must be kind of a kick being chair, is I know that there's a lot of additional responsibilities, time, all that kind of stuff, is you get to go out in the community every once in a while. You don't have to eat the rubber chicken. You're talking when the rubber chicken is being served. Yeah, and they kind of, you know, folks are interested in what's going on. You know, last week you had the kind of the chance with the League of Women Voters event to represent the county a little bit, but also to share a little bit about what's going on. Do you like the role of cheerleader?
Well, never seen myself as a cheerleader, and those pictures.
Oh, you've not seen those pictures.
Those pictures, they've been expunged. But hopefully, no one else has either. So, but you know, it is one of the things. You know, there's being the chair of the Board of Supervisors is, you know, much more of a formality than it is a position of, you know, some extra power or anything. Certainly doesn't result in me automatically eating in my way on everything. So. But I guess my other four colleagues didn't get that memo that as chair, they're supposed to just defer to me on everything.
Yeah, so. I've heard that there was one packet that was missing early in the year. Perhaps it was that one.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the obligations of chair is that you have to sign a lot of stuff every day, every Tuesday after our board meeting, get a big old thick packet of things that I have to sign in, you know, triplicate or quintuplicate, and sometimes it has to be in blue ink or it has to be in black ink. Or
really, some of them are that persnickety?
Oh, yeah. There's some. I just had one the other day that I had to sign three copies and had to sign two pages on each and initial all the pages on each. So it was like, you know, just a lot. And you know, it's not like that's a huge piece of work or anything, but...
No, I was thinking the color of ink being dictated by somebody is really
well. The reason for that is so that they can determine which is an original and which is a copy, for whatever that matters.
So you use red ink when you're signing?
Yeah, I use one of those rainbow pens.
Yeah. And just, you know, but you know, now that idea is out, I bet you a couple of folks will use that. Yeah. Just
crayons. I just have a set of crayons.
Little gold sparkle this, so. Signature
yeah.
ink.
Yeah, Sharpies and yeah, whatever. So. But, you know, and I do actually, it's one thing that I've kind of felt a little embarrassed for as the one that signs all these official documents now, is that I got a really crappy signature. So it's completely illegible.
I learned a long time ago, it was from Moose Matthews. A lot of folks know Moose or knew of Moose, but he was our attorney. And he'd be sitting there having a conversation. He'd knock out like 15 or 20 of these documents in like 2-3 minutes. Mm. And then I looked at the signature. It was like a squiggle with a little bit of a tail at the end of it. That was it. Yeah, I mean, you get to the point where, you know, that's okay, fine.
Yeah, my signature looks kind of like a, you know, a Richter scale, yeah, you know, from an earthquake. So just
okay. We'll have to compare during the break.
Yeah, jagged line. So yeah. I gotta say, Rex has a very nice signature.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just nice and loopy, and yeah, the R and the X have similar. Well,
it's only got seven letters
to it, so
yeah, it's not that big a deal. I mean.
So, yeah, and he's got some nice round letters. Mine are all sharp and jagged, you know. So,
yet another reason we're going to miss you, right? Your signature. So at the luncheon, mm-hmm. when you're in those kind of scenarios or those settings, is it an opportunity for you to learn from others as much as for you to share with others?
Well, the public speaking part of the job, you know, there's different types of venues. There's times where you're there trying to, you know, advance an issue for the county, you're trying to advocate or whatever. Something like that is much more of you're trying to convey something that's important, something that matters.
Well, yeah, when you're selling, it's one thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you're selling
and
the message.
In this
or
case, you know, with the League of Women Voters, each year the chair of the board is asked to provide the State of the Community speech. And I've had opportunity to do that twice myself, and I've seen, however many others, my colleagues over the years do it. And, you know, everyone provides their own different take on it. Anything from just kind of a recitation of here's, you know, a list of things that we've been working on and getting done this year, to personal anecdotes or, you know, stories that kind of inform how we came into this job, or a particular story of, you know, some of the work that we've done. in Jimmy Smith's case, Jimmy got up and just in true Jimmy form, he spent 15 minutes pretty much thanking every person in the room, and knew the work that they've been doing and how hard they've been, and it was so from the heart. It was awesome. So there's a really a range, and this year I was trying to kind of capture a little something different, which is the nature of change, because that's one of the things that as government, we're agents of change. We're supposed to facilitate the process of Humboldt County becoming what it's going to become, in the next few years, in the future here. And anytime you have change, there's folks that benefit from that change, and there's folks that are left behind by that change. And so you always have that fear of loss, the fear of what, what's going to be missed, that, something about the community's going to change out from under us as we move into the future. And that is a powerful motivator. And I think that we don't do a very good job of speaking to that. I think that we, some of us, and myself in particular, I think I can be a bit of a policy nerd and can get too focused on, we need to work, with these documents and data and whatever to, how we're going to facilitate that, and not focus on the fact that there's people who are affected by that. And we need to, really work with feelings and emotions. And
particularly if it's not impacting the policy maker directly. Life goes on. Well, that's easy to say if you're not being impacted.
Or in some cases, it's not that someone's necessarily going to be hurt by change. It's that it's the unknown.
KINS, we'll be back.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back Talking Shop this morning with Mark Lovelace. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting and by Redec. Mark, some of the change, I suppose there's one contingent thought that says, well, let's dampen down the impact of change. Whatever the change is that we're doing, let's try to make it as unchanging as possible, which kind of defeats the purpose. Okay. You got the other side that says, hey, game on, full speed ahead, change is going to happen, get over it. Okay. Probably most of them are somewhere in between those two extremes. So once you are reminding yourself of change and what it might mean to somebody or what it could mean, how do you go about it incorporating that thought into the process, either of the sharing of the information or maybe even does it impact how the change will be implemented?
Well, certainly you want to try to look at these impacts. You want to try to identify the impacts and who's going to fall on which side of the line with change as best as possible. But there's some things that you can't. Some things that, the Klamath Dams is one example I spoke of at the luncheon, because we know, those of us that are downstream at the lower end of the watershed, we've lived with the harm from having these dams in place for many, many years. And the communities, the tribes, the fishing industry, so many have seen the impact, the harm that's been done to them through declining salmon runs over so many years. And so they've lived with that pain and that harm and that loss for many years. So taking the dams out, helping this river renew itself, is a positive for them. But some of the folks in other areas of the river, the upper basin or the middle stretches where the dams are, there's change that will happen to them that is very difficult to mitigate. Copco Lake, which is, held by Copco 1 and Copco 2, there are a lot of people around Copco Lake who have homes there on the lake. They've built their lives. They've planned their retirement around living on the lake. They have a house with a dock and a boat, and that's the life that they'd planned for themselves. That lifestyle is going to go away when the lake goes away. And it may be replaced with something else. They may have a much bigger front yard. They may have beautiful view of a wild running river down there. You know, there's a lot of other things. But
really large paperweight.
Yeah, but it will be change. You know, it will be and it will be something different than what they'd planned on, and I think it's important that we recognize that and that we validate and not minimize the loss that those people are going to have to deal with. And that's something that, you know, there's no amount of science we can do, put all the data in the world together in terms of fisheries runs and, you know, dissolved oxygen and all these, you know, things that we're trying to affect in terms of the river. And that's meaningless to them. You know, when you talk about the balance of harms and the greater good, all they can see is that the greater good is on the other side of the line and they're on the side that's being hurt.
I would think it would be comparable if when the Eau River diversion stops. And all of a sudden, the Russian River disappears through all those communities that have been there for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
You go, okay, now what? What does life look like now? One quick comment about the dams on the Klamath. When those are gone, does that mean there's a likelihood that the Klamath will flood like it historically did? Were those, in any part, do those help to reduce or dampen down the impacts of some of the floods that we had either in the 30s or two centuries ago or, you know, the last 50 years?
No, none of those dams are provide flood control. However, the J.C. Boyle Dam, I'm forgetting the name of the dam at the further up that actually does provide flood control. That's the one that actually monitors the flow for the river. And so it's important to keep in mind these are the four lower dams on the river, but the river is still dammed up above, and that's where the actual flow control happens. They'll be able to utilize that in the dam removal process to manage flows, to be able to flush out the sediment that's accumulated behind these dams, and then ultimately to establish a good flow regime over time for this newly released stretch of river. But the dams themselves don't provide flood control in that way.
I didn't think so, and I would think that it would have been difficult to get them removed if they did.
Yeah, they provide a tiny amount of electricity, less than 2% of PacifiCorp's energy portfolio, and they're the most expensive energy-generating facilities that PacifiCorp owns per kilowatt. No flood control, no irrigation water. And these are a lot of things that get forgotten in the discussion.
Yeah, I was going to try to draw a parallel to the eel, but I don't think there is one.
Yeah.
Yeah, other than it's really old.
There you go, and that they were poorly designed.
Old diversion, and doesn't make much sense now anymore. Is there an economic offset or assistance or help or recognition for those folks that did have lakefront or that do have lakefront property and who won't have lakefront property when this process is finalized?
There are some accommodations for that, some economic impact mitigation money. But again, that's offering someone money to move or to whatever. It's not the same as, they're still going to be losing
their hopes and dreams are gone.
Yeah, the nature of where they live is going to change out from under them. And it's still, that's something that money alone can't address. There is another aspect of that in terms of whether the valuation of those properties and the impact upon them had been properly done. And that's something I've had some conversations with Siskiyou County supervisors about, seeing if we can try to make sure that that's being addressed.
Before fairly. And an after, and then cover the spread, so to speak.
Something of that sort.
Yeah. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:43. We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Mark Lovelace. Mark, so being the agent of change, how do you continue to remain sensitized? How does government, how does structure, how does bureaucracy continue to recognize the impacts of some of the decisions and what it means to somebody or somebody's lives?
Well, that's one of the ongoing tasks that we all have, and particularly those of us that are in the actual decision-making roles. We need to remain sensitive to it, just as you said. We need to recognize that sometimes we can get really mired in the technical aspects of change, that, you know, we need an ordinance that does this, a policy that does that, we need to fund this, fund that, you know, these kinds of things, and not recognize that there's a certain element of hand-holding with the community. And there's kind of two opposite forces. A training I went to for elected leaders explained that when you get elected, you've got your supporters that are expecting you to do these great things, and they want you to deliver, you know, this amazing, they want every issue to be a, you know, a touchdown, and that you're not going to be able to. The nature is that, you know, of government is that it's going to move forward slowly, and so a part of your job is going to be explaining to your supporters why, you know, 10% of what they want to achieve, you know, is progress. And is why it's a good thing. And you've got to, as he says, part of your job is to meter out disappointment at a rate your supporters can accept. Because if too much change happens too fast, the people on the other side of the line are going to be completely left behind. Well, and you need the whole community to be able to move forward together.
That's kind of what Eureka, most of the comments being made last week about the container camp.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good, bad, or indifferent. You're moving so fast. I know that one's being driven by money and protection of funds from the state, but nonetheless,
mm-hmm.
you know, without even notifying the neighbors, they're dropping this and it's like, wait, that's too fast for anybody, yeah. Let alone government moving that fast?
Yeah. There's a reason for process and a reason that things take time, because it prevents government from being too volatile, you know, that... you shouldn't have, with 1 year's election cycle, massive pendulum swings of which direction, you know, the city or the county or the state or the nation are going. So, it should be more moderate, because you want to be able to build some level of consensus in terms of the direction that we're moving, not just this year, not just this election cycle, but over time.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Speaking of time, we're out.
Okay.
See you tomorrow morning.